You're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network. I think of something snarky to start off with the name, because it's a weird, awkward name. Three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, but I got nothing except Missouri. Who wants to see anything in Missouri?
I think it sets the tone pretty well.
Does it? The show me state?
Is that indeed. What it is?
You know, so there you go. You could have done something with the show me state. You know, you said, like, show me the billboards.
Yeah, but everyone would have been,
show me the opening weekend money.
What is that?
Did you hear
Iowa? But you lost your opportunity.
I think it's Iowa's the dairy state. Is that what it is?
I forget.
But there's a big fight going because like half of them want to change it to something else.
They have a lot of corn and dairy. Yeah. And
I thought Wisconsin pretty much had the dairy state.
Oh, it's Wisconsin.
Up.
That's what it is.
Yeah, Wisconsin's got all the cheese, man.
Well, Ebbing, Missouri has all the Francis McDormand in this.
Yes.
And that's all we need.
And this, quite frankly, stunning performance from the actress. Sorry, that's the cat in the background who desperately wants something. He just doesn't know what it is. I don't even know what I'm meowing about now. But yeah, this new film by the director and writer Martin McDonagh, who did the stellar and still criminally underseen film In Bruges.
Yeah.
I mean, if you
and Seven Psychopaths.
Yeah. And Seven Psychopaths.
You
also
have to remember, for the past 20 years, Martin McDonagh has been one of the preeminent playwrights in the English-speaking
world.
Yeah,
he's amazing.
He's a great... And a little shout-out. I won't say it because we don't do shameless plugs here. But, you know...
We don't?
Well, I thought...
I don't. Well, I think because I have principles, damn it.
But
there are theater companies in town... I won't say the one, but there are theater companies in town that have done Martin McDonagh plays. And let me tell you, as great a filmmaker as he is, if you are in a town lucky enough to get a production of a Martin McDonagh play staged, I highly recommend you go see it.
And so I didn't even realize he was a playwright.
Really?
And after
we
saw this, Mark was the one telling me, like, oh, yeah, this is not only easily the best of the three films he's made and the most mature as a filmmaker, it feels a lot more like his playwright.
I feel like his playwriting is the big thing for him, and then these are like, oh, I'm going to have fun.
It's moving into film. Now.
No, it's actually very specifically. He has said he thinks that theater is he's explicit about this. Isn't like hyperbole. He thinks it's an inferior art form
to
theater.
He really does.
He's been very explicit.
It is an elitist form of art.
Well, also
to a certain extent, he can be more radical within the film and get bigger audiences.
And it's very limited in what you can do because at the end of the day, it's
true.
You do not have the control over the image that you have in film.
But he like any good playwright, takes advantage of language.
Yeah.
What theater does so well is deal with language. And Martin McDonagh has not only crafted a really great script, but a really great ear for dialogue. Over the course of his career, he has really developed that to where he's one of the masters. I mean, he's on par with guys like Mamet or Pinter or whoever other playwright you want to think of. And that certainly comes to play in this screenplay.
Yeah, which you would guess less watching his previous two films, that was the more the type of stuff he did.
What is In Bruges? But two guys just talking
In
for
Bruges.
2 hours.
Words.
And he can sustain your interest. We had this kind of conversation the other day about Mudbound. The other idea that, you know, like, oh, you know, if you use a lot of language, in your case, voiceover, and I grant you that, but there's this idea that in film, you should not have a lot of speaking. The more you can eliminate dialogue and rely on the visuals, the stronger it is as a cinematic work.
But there are great
filmmakers who use language.
No,
I don't care if it's Billy Wilder or Paddy Chayefsky.
I don't think I ever
You didn't go that far, but I have heard that comment.
Well, a lot of
people are like, like film is all about the image. It doesn't matter about the dialogue. Like, fuck you.
Well, no,
have you ever read a great screenplay? It has words in it.
In film, it's one of those with exposition anyway. It's show me, don't tell me is the rule, which I do generally
agree with.
Yeah, and if there is going to be a weakness, it's going to be with too much dialogue. But when you have somebody like Martin McDonagh writing the dialogue, I don't think that
rarely goes wrong.
Applies.
And I say rarely, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, there are he is one of those guys who writes dialogue that I look forward to the same way I look forward to seeing what Mamet does or Aaron Sorkin.
Or Tarantino. Know, like, I mean, yeah. Guys who just are great. Tarantino's the greatest example of that.
The worst.
They're like, great film is only about the visuals. Like, no. Tarantino is like 80% dialogue.
Yeah. Well, this particular film features Frances McDormand as Mildred Hayes. She's a divorced mom who's still dealing very heavily with the rape and very violent murder of her teenage daughter, Angela, from 7 months beforehand. And she feels completely impotent because nobody seems to be doing anything. The police force run by local sheriff Woody Harrelson is, as far as she can tell, is just giving up on this thing.
All the leads have dried up.
So she decides she is going to rent 3 abandoned billboards outside of her hometown, which read in sequence, "Raped while dying and still no arrests. How come, Chief Willoughby?" And this sets the town a bit, more than just a bit, on edge. We're trying to, like, I feel
like
the
police force on edge.
Well, I mean, the town was trying to kind of emotionally sweep this horrible act that happened under the rug themselves. Right. They're like, okay, the police force, like, at first you're like, they're just incompetent.
No. That's one of the core issues that the film tackles. That they're not. She feels they are.
Yes,
and
that is
what McDonough is really looking at here.
There aren't any villains here.
What do you do when you have nowhere to put your anger?
Right.
And this is her putting. This is the way that she finds to put her anger. And what builds out beautifully here is that when you look at what Willoughby is doing, Willoughby is trying, but there's nothing for him to try with. He's punching at the air as much as she is, just in very different ways. He becomes the target for her anger because she can't find something else to be angry at. And that's what McDonough is really putting
here. Everything is more complicated when it is revealed that the sheriff, in fact, is very ill.
Right.
And
he's also very popular. He's a very, very well-respected member of the community.
Yeah.
He is dying, and the community starts going to Mildred and going, you know, can you lay off the guy? He's about to die.
I mean, and not helping anything is his officer, played by Sam Rockwell, who is playing a very Sam Rockwell-esque type role, a very racist, redneck kind of piece of shit guy, who yet nonetheless, a lesser writer would have kept him like this cliche, but McDonough finds a way
to... him an arc. He actually has a character arc. Amazingly.
They pull out his humanity. You're just like, wow, this is... What an amazing way to
treat this
character.
He is a racist, cracker, doofus, mama's boy.
Yeah.
And yet, by the end, you're kind of pulling for him.
Yeah,
without letting him off the hook. Without, you acknowledge one thing that it's kind of this undercurrent through all of the film... is the idea that, this little town has a history with racism and brutalizing any kind of black or person of color who falls, prey to the police department. Willoughby is kind of this sort of guy who's trying to stay above it all. But one thing that they always keep coming back to is this idea of injustice. The idea that this particular police department is incapable of providing justice to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And, and you're right. Richard is right, I should say. Richard was right when he said that this is about a woman who has nowhere else to put her anger.
Yeah.
And she expresses it through these billboards.
Yeah.
And McDonough does this really beautiful thing where he does not give us any villains. He gives us a lot of flawed characters.
Yeah.
But no villains.
Although he makes you think that some of these characters are indeed going to be sort of like two-dimensional villains, to surprise you by making them about so much more than that. They fool you into thinking that some characters are just there for like a bit of comic relief, like Peter Dinklage, who's a dwarf who lives in the town
town midget.
Yeah, and everyone treats him kind of shabbily, but he's clearly got a crush on Mildred.
Yeah.
And you're like, they actually really bring some humanity to him, and they give him where his interaction with her turns into a big self-reveal moment for her, you've got Caleb Landry Jones playing the guy who owns the advertising agency.
Wonderful.
Who's great in this
job. For a brief moment, I thought that was Eddie Redmayne. I don't know why.
Really?
Is that Eddie? No, that's
nope.
not.
Nope.
Even John Hawkes is her ex-husband, who's this piece of shit that used to beat her and ran off with a 20-year-old. Even he is not a cartoon villain.
Yeah.
And he genuinely feels bad about the fact that his daughter has died.
All of them are three-dimensional.
And also, that Mildred is not beyond reproach.
Right.
McDonough, he's not likable. McDonough, you know, says, you know, if this terrible thing had not happened to her, would you have liked her?
Yeah.
Would she be somebody you would spend any time with? And you kind of got to go, I don't necessarily know I would. And that's really the strength of McDonough's script, is that he goes, just because something bad happens to somebody who's not a good person, does that make them a bad person?
Right.
You know, does them not being perfect make them a bad person?
And they do a lot.
And this is about, you know, those sensibilities.
You have a lot of reflection on just that as it goes along. Your, you know, your immediate sympathies are with Mildred, but as it goes along, yeah, you realize she's kind of a horrible person in a lot of ways. Chief Willoughby, who's initially presented, you're assuming he's the dumb racist cop, is presented as actually an incredibly sweet guy who nonetheless does have some, you know, kind of racist tendencies.
He's got some dirt under his fingers.
He's aware that you can't. He's like one of those guys.
Never proven.
I'm a little racist, but I'm not gonna perform as a cop. My duty as a cop with that as part of it. Yeah. You know, so. It's, and like we said, the stuff they do with Sam Rockwell here, it starts off as like the most Sam Rockwell-y, like racist piece of shit, redneck character, and then actually making him, I thought, probably the most fascinating character in this whole thing.
I think so too.
This film really took me by surprise in a lot of ways. People are like, well, what would you compare it to? I'm like,
Fargo is the obvious comparison, but it's not fit.
It's just because
it has, you know, Frances McDormand, and it has that sort of quirkiness that makes people think of the Coen brothers. Watching it, the one thing that I kind of thought about, and these two films could not be further apart. Two of my favorite films of this year have been Three Billboards, but also The Florida Project.
Yeah.
Those films could not be any more alike. However, what intrigued me about both of those films is that they don't really play by the rules of the traditional well-made, well-crafted three-act structure, where even the surprises and plot reveals, you kind of go, well, of course, that's exactly where it would go. It's appropriate that you should have that.
Right.
They feel unmoored from those conventions. So even in the case of The Florida Project, everything that happens feels unexpected, but also kind of banal. In this particular film, because McDonough is famous for doing some really extreme moments of violence and black humor, it is equally, if not, actually, it's more unpredictable. Because you go, oh, shit, we're going there now?
Yeah, this movie.
I didn't know that was, whoa, yeah. I did not expect that.
The movie takes some seriously odd turns. It does indeed, as much as it's dealing with some very dark, like, stuff, it also has moments that are just hold your stomach laughing funny.
Yeah. And heart, that's the thing. She does not hate these characters.
Yeah.
This is not a sort of like, I'm going to present you these characters like bugs that I've pinned down for your for display and let's watch them squirm. This is a character who genuinely, or this is a writer who genuinely likes the characters that he's exploring. And that gives it the heart. You can laugh and be shocked by what they do, but yet still empathize with them.
So is anybody else like me here where you think this is pretty much seems like a front runner for Best Picture this year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I saw the trailer and I thought, let's just give Frances McDormand an Oscar
amazing.
Now.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything yet that I think is as more likely to win.
And it
so
is
far.
As iconic as her Marge from Fargo. It is every bit as iconic.
Oh, yeah.
Any actor would be lucky to have one character this iconic.
It's like one of the best performances, man or woman, all year, probably.
Absolutely. And it's
wonderful. I think the shame is that it probably means that, you know, Margot Robbie is not going to get the Oscar this year for
right. Right.
Which is, yeah, but yeah.
But Margot Robbie is half her age. In 20 years, she'll be playing something this big.
Everybody says that about every performer.
Yeah.
You know. So the dice do not always roll that way, but this is an extraordinary performance.
But
Harrelson.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see whether the studios decide to push him for best supporting for this or best actor for LBJ. Because there's, you know, two performances where it really shows his ability to play characters that in lesser hands would be unlikable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For him to instead take his natural innate likability and gear that down and texture that, nuance that, but still channel it into these characters where you go, everything superficially is a character that at this point in American cinema I should regard as a bad guy.
Mm.
He's a rural racist police chief,
right?
In one of the shittier bits of Missouri. but
who somehow got married to Abby Cornish.
Yeah, that's one of those moments where you just go, there's clearly something about this guy.
Yeah. And he quotes Shakespeare and other things, and you go, okay, you're not a complete idiot. Yeah. You've got some smarts.
Yeah, as opposed to your officers.
Whereas Sam Rockwell, who's like the guy who lives with a harpy of a racist mother and reads comic books.
She's great.
You know, and she's great in this, because I'm like, yeah, I believe this woman. I've seen women like this.
even then, what that shows you is that, you know, she wants the best for him.
Yeah,
she is monstrous, but she is not a monster, and that's what Madonna does so well, is separate out the character traits from the character, and to give them that degree of depth that nobody feels like even the smallest supporting parts feel like there is something more to them, that they have a life once they walk out of the door. And that is really quite an astonishing achievement. I mean, you know, you can't underestimate him as a script writer.
No, absolutely you cannot. In fact, now I will, you know, three for three, I'm officially, he's on my highest anticipated any given thing he does next list.
Oh, I was so giddy when I heard about this one. I was like, oh my God,
in some respects, he is a sort of modern day, modern day is perhaps the wrong word, because David Mamet is very much still alive. But the sense that, you know, here's a playwright who is putting out some great work in the theater and then suddenly transfers his gifts to film, I think McDonough is actually better. Mm-hmm. And that's a strong words, I know. But I've always thought that Mamet is a great writer and an okay director.
I agree with that.
I think in this case, you have McDonough has proven more than once for the past 20 years that he is a great writer. But now in the past, say, half decade or so, he's proven he's a great director.
I mean, he said
too.
Himself, he's clearly in love with cinema.
Yeah, and he said he's only going to do about one, maybe every 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, he has no intention of being as prolific a filmmaker as he was a playwright, because I think now he can be choosy, and also because he knows how the sausage is made and he wants to do good.
Well, also, I mean, he has been, you know, he's choosy because he knows that not everything he's going to do is going to be the best thing possible, and I think he just wants to put his best work out. And he's announced plays and then gone, this isn't happening.
Yeah, right. He's actually published trilogies, and then, like, the third one, I wasn't good enough to publish.
Yeah, no, this is done. And it's never been performed. He's never released it. So, yeah, he's very, very particular about the work that he's doing. But if he's going to do this stuff like this, then, you know... Hangman, which is his latest play, which is one of the best, which is transferring to Broadway next year.
Yeah.
And is one of his best reviewed works in ever. You know, he's just on a remarkable roll at the moment.
All that being said, if this movie, which I suspect might be his best performing film, especially if it does indeed come home with several awards.
Oh, every
actor in the industry is going to want to work with him.
And a lot of people are going to be willing to pay him a lot more than he would previously, the level he was at, to come in and make a movie. So, you know, you're like, now I have audience recognition of, like, your general audiences by name. That's a big deal.
People are going to have a hard time. I think actors are going to have a hard time working with him, just because he's got a stable of people that he likes to work with.
Yeah, I mean, he's worked with Sam Rockwell before.
Peter Dinklage.
I believe he's worked with Tom Waits before, and I think he and Tom Waits and, oh my God, I'm blanking on the avant-garde name, Robert Wilson, avant-garde director, they're working on a stage musical piece.
Oh, fine.
You know, because previously it was him, Tom Waits, and William Burroughs. He's like, well, William Burroughs is dead, so I'll get Martin McDonagh. That tells you what his reputation is.
I want him to work with Brendan Gleeson again.
And the thing is, if you look, another underrated film was directed by his brother, John McDonagh, The Guard.
The Guard.
Oh, John Cheadle and Brendan Gleeson.
Yes, they're brothers. Oh, my God.
Martin McDonagh. Executive produced it, but that was his brother, who works very much in the same wheelhouse.
Yeah, they have the same sense of humor.
To have that sense of humor and that kind of appeal to, like, great actors... This is a powerhouse guy. And, you know, I want to see what he does next.
Well, Marco, keep going into your final thoughts.
All right. Well, I think it's very clear from everything we've said that all of us like this movie very much. We've been focusing all the great things. I will admit, I do have one quibble, which is, as much as I love his dialogue, as witty and funny it is, there are moments that almost took me out of the movie. because I've lived in enough small towns to kind of appreciate some of the nuances and eccentricities of small town folk and the way they talk. So there are times when the dialogue gets a little self-conscious, particularly when you're dealing with the actors who are on the lower end of the bill, who maybe don't have the chops to really sell it. You know, no problem with Frances McDormand. She sells every single line of dialogue she has. So that was a slight thing that took me out of it on occasion. It seemed a little precious. And let's not forget, this is an Irishman trying to imagine what people in a small town, Missouri, talk like. And he doesn't always succeed. But he succeeds more often than not. And that's important. I think Frances McDormand is a front runner for Best Actress. I think the film itself is probably a front runner for Best Picture. I had a great time at this movie. I think it's a very beautiful, stylized, let's not forget the technical aspects. Cinematography on this is great. Production design on this is great. Performances, great. Only quibble was the language on occasion. I give this movie a 9.5 out of 10 talking bunny slippers.
Laura?
I agree with pretty much everything you said, Marco. Every once in a while, the dialogue just took me out, like the betwixt us and this, that, and the other. It was like this really formal way of looking at how a small town person in the Midwest might speak. That was the only problem I had with this. I felt like I got hit by a truck the first time I saw this, because I've seen it twice now.
Oh, wow.
And it was, as you know, a friend said to me as he came out of the movie, was, "What the fuck just happened?" And that's pretty much it is, because it's not like any other movie you're going to see. It was amazing. The color scheme was interesting. There were some color choices that were unusual, most from all the films that I've seen so far. Love the dialogue. The characters, above all, were what sell me on Martin McDonagh and his work. Just all the characters had so much dimension. There were no villains. And by the end, every single one of them had depth, and you cared about all of them, and they were all unique. Yeah. Nothing was subpar. This is fabulous. I loved it, and I'm going to give it 10 flaming billboards.
There you go. Richard?
I didn't have any problems with the dialogue. I mean, there's a certain degree of stylization, but those are from characters who are, you know, are ones with flourishes. So I didn't have any of those issues. I think it blended that kind of earthiness and that aspiration and the wittiness that sometimes you'll get in those kind of communities. But this is a powerhouse of a film. It is extraordinarily timely, not because it deals with a sexual assault and the fallout from it in the direct way, but in how we talk about justice, how we talk about revenge, how we talk about societal interactions at very basic levels, and what it is we expect from it. It is about the melding of the personal and the political, and what we do it every day, and how that is reflected in our interactions, and how extreme we can be, and how angry we can be. And in a time of extraordinary anger, to have a film that it is about anger and is not just angry is really important. That's really significant. And McDonagh, I don't think he could have, you know, he couldn't have planned this. He didn't plan it to be as timely as it is. This is sheer raw accident. But even taken out of this precise moment in time, this is a remarkable piece of cinema. It is by far his strongest script for the screen. It is beautifully performed. The leads, and the way that the leads move in and out of perspective and in and out of sympathy until they're all sympathetic and all have texture is a remarkable achievement. McDonagh has just, you know, this film sets a bar this year, and particularly in a year where we've had so many films that have been built around space and gaps in the dialogue to be something that is so stylized and for it to not feel out of time is really astonishing. This is a clear 10 out of 10, wisely avoiding the usage of the term Missouri.
Yeah, I think this is straight up a masterpiece. I really do. This is probably going to be the best film we see this year. And I hope people actually do get out and go see it. You know, only thing working against this thing at all is that it's got the most unwieldy title imaginable. But, like, And I hope that's not something you go, it sounds like some arty thing. I don't want to see it.
No, they'll just call it Three Billboards.
This is both very emotionally resonant in an artistic way and a film that's really kind of fun to watch.
It's a morality play. It's like a passion play.
It is. And you were talking about how it's about anger. It's also really about forgiveness and how difficult that is, you know, of understanding. And by the end, I just felt like I was on some sort of weird, glowing emotional plateau watching this whole thing. And you couldn't help but think about stories that are in the news right now and reflections on that.
Timely,
even though
like
written well before all this stuff, it feels like it could have been written like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
I thought this was fantastic. This is the highest recommended film this year. I give it 10 out of 10 Molotov cocktails. Because, those are always fun. What else you got to do in Missouri?
Missouri.
I like cocktails.
Don't call it Missouri.
Missouri.
No such place.